Right now on Tech Radio, mad scientists and inventors.
Hi, I'm Artemis. I am a computer-generated AI voice, and you're listening to Tech Radio.
Every week, online and on air with RTE Radio, we bring you the latest in tech from Ireland and, of course, across the world. You're welcome to episode 1011, where this week we have a superstar guest interview with Jack McCauley, the inventor, if you like, of the Oculus VR headset. Also, the latest stories for you this week, including a mad scientist putting chips in people's brains, why Apple are not making many friends, and the Oscars of the Irish IT industry are coming. Let's get to it.
From techcentral.ie, this is Tech Radio with Dusty Rhodes and Niall Kitson.
I'm Dusty, joined by Niall Kitson, our editor-in-chief, as always. Let's start off with our Mad Scientist of the Week award, which we're going to give to Elon Musk.
Asher, we could just, you know, mad insert thing of the week and we could probably give it to Elon Musk. What's he good at this week? Let's turn him into the evil version of it.
Do you know what? This so reminds me of Frankenstein. It's like a real life Frankenstein story, but obviously it's very good. It was a guy. What happened to this guy that he ended up being paralyzed?
Yeah, Nolan Darbach, now that we know his name, because in January we heard that Neuralink, which is Elon Musk's company for inserting neural processors into people's brains and have them do things that they can't anymore or could never do in the first place. This is a gentleman who was paralyzed in a diving accident. So a legitimate person in need of help, in need of some sort of assistive technology. He had a chip implanted in his brain. You might remember he was able to do some fairly rudimentary things. Wasn't he able to move a mouse or something like that? Now he is up to playing chess. And apparently he was able to play Civilization, which is a slightly more elaborate computer game, but he's been able to play chess as well. And we're finding out a little bit more about his experience so far. He said, look, it's been super easy. I haven't had any sort of side effects. Everything is going really, really well, which is exactly the face that Neuralink wants to have. Because they are not in the good books of regulators in the States, which is to say it's not being regulated. So this is kind of, it's a gamble for Elon Musk, who was very much of the, I'll do it myself and I'll show you guys how it's supposed to be done. School of thought. It seems to be working out with Neuralink so far. Tried it with a certain social network, has not. So, you know, this looks to be a case of something going well. I don't know. I don't like the fact this is unregulated. I am, of course, impressed with the results that it's getting. What's your take?
When you say unregulated, it sounds like people are doing things to other human beings that are just downright illegal, but it's not. It's unregulated because it's uncharted territory. Nobody has done this before, but so of course it's not regulated. And we've had that, I don't know how many times, with how many things, where something new comes onto the marketplace, something new is going on in the world, and it's only like a year later, a month later, that they start to regulate it or put some kind of rules and regulations on it, like, you know. So the fact it's unregulated, no, it doesn't bother me in the slightest. I think the fact that they're doing it, and they're doing it with a willing, I'm trying not to say the word victim, but you know exactly what I mean. Like, you know, participants, exactly. A willing participant. Well, then great, because you've got to start somewhere, you know, and as they progress with it, things will go wrong. And I'm quite sure that, you know, kind of people will die. But at the end of it, if we are able to put chips into people's brains that help people massively improve their lives, well, then I think it's worth it.
That is an interesting take on it. I would rather nobody die as a result of this.
Well, of course, I'm not promoting that's what should happen. I'm not saying, do you have somebody in your life that you would like to, like, you know, go away? Sign them up for this mad experiment.
You wouldn't mind.
Yes. I have a mother-in-law I'd like to donate to Elon Musk. that kind of way. No, I'm not. No, not at all. Not at all. But anything that happens with mankind, there is always a cost to it. And I would think of the aviation industry and all the people who have lost their lives, like over the last 100 years, flying planes to all kinds of crazy places and want to be the first across the Pacific and all this kind of stuff. Building the Empire State Building. I mean, that famously, I think there was one death per floor or something like that, like, you know, but it stands as an icon today. So, you know, things like that will happen. So the fact it's not regulated, doesn't bother me. Anyway, listen, let's get on to another kind of an award of the week and best use of artificial intelligence. And I hate to use the word intelligence because this is a Trump related story, but it's a cracker.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. You remember, I mean, he's still very much in the news, has a very good profile, has been rehabilitating himself in public as well as part of the justice system in America, is one Michael Cohen, a lawyer famous for saying he would happily take a bullet for Donald Trump, discovered, no, the feeling was not mutual.
Yeah, exactly.
And went in front of Congress and lied on behalf of Donald Trump, and recanted his testimony, now serving time for lying to Congress, been lying to the FBI as well, for being less than truthful, we will say.
But this week he's come up with a spectacular lie.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for a guy that has been doing so well getting out and, you know, decrying the Trump organization in public, going on TV and saying, you know, this is all a load of nonsense, and everyone going, God, maybe he's not so bad after all. He is under supervised release at the moment, and he went in front of a court basically looking to be slightly less supervised. And he came with a series of precedents to give to his lawyer to go argue in front of the judge. Sounds perfectly fine. I mean, so the guy's a lawyer. He can do his own research. You would think. And it turns out that three of the cases that he wanted to use as precedents were actually generated by AI.
And now when you say generated by AI, they basically asked an AI and the AI gave them an answer. But the problem was that the answer AI gave didn't exist.
Didn't exist. It was it was either a hallucination or, depending on how the question was asked, Cohen's argument, his apology, his mea culpa was basically, I thought this was a search engine. I used Google Bard. I thought it was the search engine. It had Google in the title.
Like, lawyers, you have to be an intelligent person to be a lawyer because you've got to figure out all those things and you have to pass an exam and it takes years. How can he be that dumb?
Well, either he thought he was the smartest man in the room or the judge was the dumbest man in the room. Or he himself was the dumbest man in the room. There's, I don't know.
Also on AI, we have Microsoft are actually doing something good in the world with their AI tour of Ireland. Tell me about this.
Yeah, they've got an initiative that is basically looking at Munster for the moment. It's basically, let's get people skilled and familiar with using AI in business around the country, because fairly easy to guess that Dublin is probably covered by scale alone. So Microsoft, a combination of Microsoft Fit, who we know through the show here, and RDI Hub down in Kerry, I think. They are doing a series of masterclasses and what they're calling a skill-up-a-thon or a skeleton. And it's basically, you know, here's AI, here's how you can use it, here's basic literacy in AI. I mean, this is something that we talked about last year. We were talking about getting people AI literate. This is one of this is one solution to that problem. These are free courses. And they're looking to target about 10,000 people in business. Again, looking throughout the Munster region, it's a slow rollout, but it will definitely get there. So I think they're looking at Kerry, Mayo, Cork, that kind of catchment area for the moment.
All right. Okay. I think it'd be good if they, I suppose, an introduction to AI. Do you know what I would love to learn? I would love to go to a course for AI prompting. Because yeah. I know how to use AI. It's so simple. It's like, here's your box, what's your question? And it gives you an answer, or you tell it to do a summary of this and boom, it does a summary of it. But to actually know the prompts to put in to get it work at its maximum is something. Anyway, that's only me. Another Microsoft story this week. They're quite aggressively pushing Bing AI on Chrome browsers running on Windows because can.
You absolutely have a choice, Dusty. You absolutely can choose. It doesn't make any difference. Yeah. You can just choose what you want. And that's it. Yeah, no consequences.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the story?
It's just kind of like when you start Chrome, it's kind of like this, like it suddenly pops up and goes like, you know, hey, do you want to use GPT-4 for free with Bing? And you kind of go, ooh, yeah, great. Okay, that's fine. And then it says, brilliant, fantastic. Okay, so we'll use Microsoft Edge now as your default browser. And then you go, oh, no, hang on, that's not what I wanted. There's a reason I installed Chrome in the first place on my computer.
So, that's the swap. You can use GPT-4. You just have to swap over to Edge.
There you go. And then when you say, no, I don't want that, it goes, wait, don't change back. You'll lose. Bing.
Oh, wow.
I have a thing about all of these. And it's not just Microsoft. Loads of people are doing it, all right? But these pop-ups come up just as you want to use the actual application to do something. And usually, for me, I'm in a hurry to get it done or something like that. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of like if you want to book a train ticket or something using a train app, it's like, yes, indeed. We've just upgraded our application. You need to upgrade the app now and re-enter your credit card details. I don't need that. Or what? Facebook, we're dreadful at it. When the DMAs were coming in and it said you would log into Facebook just one day and it would go, yes, things are changing in the EU. So you now need to decide if you want to continue using Facebook for free or if you want to pay $9.99. Or what way did they do it? They do it in a very threatening way. Like Facebook are kind of going, you'll have to pay $9.99 a month to use Facebook from now on, and you must make a decision now.
Or and it'll be awful if you don't.
Or you continue to use it for free, whatever. It's asking you for a decision like that without really giving you any information. That's the same with Microsoft. They're just pushing Bing. Now, there's no harm in selling it or pushing it or whatever, but I hate the hard sell.
Yeah, but you know what? Europe is going to be all over this, and then Microsoft will be, oh, so sorry. We never thought this would offend anyone or this would limit people's choices, like the Digital Markets Act is expressly setting out to address and make sure it does not happen. Oh, so we'll see how long they get away with it before they get slapped on the wrist.
Listen, and Microsoft are not the only ones. I've got a really dirty story to come for you in a few minutes' time. But first, let's talk about the Oscars of the Irish IT industry, the Tech Excellence Awards. You were at the Tech Excellence Awards. They're coming up. So the reason I'm mentioning it today is because the entries are free, but you kind of have to get them in for Easter or just after Easter. I think it is Easter Friday.
Yeah, 5th of April. And then
there you go, Grant. So judging then and then the big thing in May. But you were at the awards last year. Tell me what they were like.
Yeah, well, we organised them at Tech Central. They're our sort of our focal point for the year, if you will. Mm-hmm. There's 23 awards on the night. Yours truly gets to stand up and hand out one of them, which is pretty nice. And sometimes people that are friends of the show do get recognised and have taken away awards. You might remember Sandra Healy from Inclusio. We spoke to her last year about diversity in the workplace. She was last year's Person of the Year. And this is, you know, very important to stress. These are awards decided by an independent jury, as opposed to, you know, an internal one from Tech Central or anything like that. Our jury panel is completely independent. So it gives us a little bit of heft that that we quite like. Anywho, entries open till the 5th of April. It's happening on the 23rd of May in the Royal Marine Hotel Dunleary. Black tie gala event, dress up, have a good night. It's all there. And of course, it's free to enter.
Cool. And the judges are quite weighty people in the IT industry as well, aren't they?
Don't say that. I mean, I know one or two of them have been, you know, hitting the gym.
I don't mean they're heavy people. I mean, they're very important people. goodness, Niall. Judges from, like, the, no, the, but seriously, like, the, you know, Tyndall National Institute, that's one of the premium technical IT organizations in the country.
We have academics, we have entrepreneurs, we have people working in the IT sector at management level. So it's
people
a very
from Trinity, co-founder of Iona Technologies. I mean,
we've had one of the chairs chairs of Liro for as well. So and previous CIO of Ishgairin. So
yes,
we do have an awful lot of very learned and very highly skilled individuals. So if you're going to be judged by someone, you may as well be judged by somebody that is really, really good at what they do. And thankfully, our judging panel is that.
Excellent. Okay, cool. So the entries are free anyway at techcentral.ie. You can't miss the banner at the top of the page. They do close just after Easter. The way I look at it is, hey, if it's free, why not? Yeah, you know, if you get a nomination, you can go to the boss and you go, well, A, you've got an award nominee working for you. And secondly, trump up and buy some tickets, will you? and we have a good night out. That's it. Anyway, techcentral.ie, you'll find all the details for that. Let's get back to nasty people in the world of tech doing bold things. Apple, they are not making friends. As we know, there's been this ongoing thing with Epic Games and many, many people on the Apple Store who are not happy because they have to pay 30% of whatever revenue they make from the Apple Pay Store to Apple. And some of them, including Spotify and Meta, have done this as well with Facebook. They will charge users 30% extra because they're buying it through the App Store, which I think is funny, because Apple go on about how the customer is king and blah 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 and all this kind of stuff and how we care about people and we want the very best, but it's those customers who are paying 30% more.
Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, it's
They are.
Whoever registered with the App Store, right? Say you're charging €10, and you decide, okay, €10 is the fee for my service. It's going to cost that much on iOS. It's going to cost that much on my website. Just so happens that the processing fee is 30% if you do it through iOS. So you have to make that decision. Do you want to eat the additional cost, or do you want to hope that iOS will bring in enough extra customers that it won't make the cost as punitive as it sounds on paper? If you're getting 100 people to sign up through iOS versus 10 through your website, I mean, do you make a decision that, I'll eat that iOS, for want of a better word, tax?
Right. Why should you be paid 30% less? Right. You're writing you're a journalist. You're writing articles for techcentral.ie, okay? Yep. And we will pay you by the word or by the article or whatever, except for the ones that we publish on Apple. You're going to get paid 30% less for those articles. You happy with that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if that's my sole source of income, you're kind of a hostage to it.
Now you're changing your tune.
Well, I mean, if it's your sole source of income and you can't, you know, if you want to say, okay, it'll cost this much through Apple, it'll cost this much through another platform, and you're free to go. But do you make a big deal of it if most of your income is through Apple? If it comes through that vector, do you go, you can, you know, one click and pay through the App Store, that's fine.
Yeah.
Or go to my website and buy it direct where I get more, or fund me on a Kickstarter,
but if you
or
didn't,
fund me on Patreon.
If you didn't have to pay the 30%, you could actually sell that service for less to your users.
Mm.
So instead of charging them €10 a month on Apple, you could sell them to them for, say, £8 a month, which is why I'm saying it's Apple customers in the long run are paying for all of this. Anyways, the reason why I say Apple aren't making any friends is that Epic Games have been having this colossal court case over this
for a long time.
And every time there's a decision in court, it gets appealed by the other side. And blah, 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 blah. It's all gone all the way up to the Supreme Court in the States. And I think there's one more hearing or something like that, or it's been thrown. Anyway, for the next stage in the legal battle, okay, Epic Games has been joined by, and I think this is amazing, Meta, okay, who do Facebook and Instagram and yada, 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 Microsoft, X, Twitter, the Match Group, which do Tinder and all those kind of things, like colossal names in the tech industry. And they're all lining up behind Epic to say, we agree, this ain't right.
Those are some heavy hitters right there.
There are some very heavy hitters. And I know what's different about it, because it's the European DMA has done it so that you can use a payment processor outside of Apple, okay?
Mm. Yep.
And what Apple have done, if they've gone, okay, that's fine, you don't have to use Apple Pay and you don't have to lose 30% using our payment processing fee. But if you use an outside payment processor, you'll have to pay a fee of 27% in order to be allowed to use the external payment processor, who probably charges 3%, so you still get your 30%.
Oh, but you know what's going to happen?
Ridiculous.
Do you know what's going to happen? Prices will go up in the States, right? To eat that loss Apple was potentially going to make. And, you know, as a convenience to us over here in Europe, they will harmonize the prices and we will end up getting paid more for the benefit of being protected by the Digital Markets Act. Watch this.
Gotta love the EU. Gotta love the EU.
I love the EU. They I mean, for all the bloat, for all the bloviating, when they do it right, they do it right. And we'll be talking about another way in which they're doing it right in a couple of weeks' time. Just going to sit on that as a bit of a teaser for now. But
you tease. Now, speaking of teasing, I've got two little stories, sordid stories from the internet. Firstly, in the UK, and I do like this story, actually, a guy has been accused and jailed after cyber flashing. And cyber flashing being, you know, kind of flashing in public, code open, showing all your wares to the world. Cyber flashing is sending an unsolicited photo of certain parts of your body that are usually kept private to somebody who never wanted to see it in the first place.
It was flashing was like the sex crime du jour of the 1980s, wasn't it? It just felt like there was like an epidemic of flashing during the 80s. It just seemed to sort of trail off in the 90s. I don't know. Is it coming back with Gen Z? Is that what's happening? Have they reclaimed flashing?
I have no idea. When I think of the 80s, I think of Miami Vice and Back to the Future. You think of flashers. So
That's shocking.
I don't want to go any further in that conversation.
That's shocking.
However, this is in the UK where a man has been convicted of a cyber flashing. It's the first conviction under the new law there. Hmm. I like in the UK that they've done a thing where the victims are never named.
That's great. Yeah.
It is great because it means that if something happens, you take a screenshot on your phone and you go to the police and da 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 and whatever, like, you know. So that's good. I'm wondering if, because I've seen ads on websites and various things with Commissioner Mon now, who are responsible for all kinds of online activity and things that shouldn't be happening. Is this something that they might also get involved with? I wonder. That's one thing.
Interesting. I suppose it depends where it happens. If it's a case of revenge porn or something like that, no, I think you're going straight to the Gardaí with that. If it was a case of a platform like Chat Roulette, this is probably it. Probably their territory. Unfortunately, I don't think Chat Roulette has an office in Ireland, so they don't.
Is it still on?
I think it is. I'm not going to Google it now because God knows I'd see.
Tapping away now. Please. The other story in a related area is if you are hooking up with a new partner and you're kind of, you get down to, you know, kind of really the working end of things and you say, hang on, pause, okay?
Yeah.
Where at the point where you kind of go, pause, let's talk about, or let's get some protection in place here. You now also have the opportunity of saying, pause, let me get my phone. I'm just going to take a picture of, boom, and I'm going to upload it to an online AI called Calmara.ai, who will examine the photo for STIs. And if it finds anything of interest, it will email you back, probably with a big red screen saying, don't go there!
Or a smiley face saying, work away. Thumbs up.
Indeed. Big thumbs up. Niall, as always, thanks for the news this week.
From techcentral.ie, this is the award-nominated Tech Radio from techcentral.ie.
Oculus is a brand associated with plenty of things, whether it's the exciting return of virtual reality or the not-so-exciting prospect of the metaverse. At least we're on the road to it becoming something very special indeed. Behind it all is the company that started as a Kickstarter and has since become a global brand called Oculus. Their co-founder, Jack McCauley, who is also innovator in residence at the University of California, Berkeley, has seen the current wave of VR go from unsophisticated prototype to the slick off-the-wall models that we know today. Recently, Jack joined Niall Kitson to chat about his role in getting the company off the ground and maybe where it could be going next.
Jack, a lot of people would be very familiar with the Oculus Rift, of course, but fair to say, even more people will be familiar with your earlier work. And I'm sure in true music snob sense, a lot of people say they prefer your earlier stuff. So tell us a little bit about your involvement with rhythm games, and in particular in Guitar Hero.
So I would say that in regards to my participation in working in gaming, a lot of it was due, first of all, it's very small. There's not very many people doing it. It's not like working in automotive, where there's major corporation, Toyota, General Motors, Ford, it's much smaller than that. So everyone kind of knows each other. And I got hired by people knowing me. So to answer your question on Guitar Hero, I was working for a hardware division of Take-Two. And Take-Two is the publisher of Grand Theft Auto. And so I was working for the guy that had their hardware division. His company, his hardware company, was purchased by Take-Two by a guy named Kelly Summer. I'll get back to that in a second. These guys are all in the UK and so forth. So I got a call from this guy. He goes, "Hey, Kelly Summer, who is the CEO of Take-Two, called me and wants me to go take a look at this game." And he said, "They'll be at CES, which is a big consumer electronics show in Las Vegas. This is in 2005, and they have a demo of it running, right?" So when I get involved with a venture, I see the dark side of it. Like, if it's not going to work, this isn't going to work. So that's just me. So he takes me into this room, and there's these two Asian guys in there, Charles and Kai Huang, who are brothers, and they have this little company called Red Octane. And he wanted me to see this game because he wanted me to design their hardware for it. So I go in there, take a look at it. They have it running with two plastic guitars from a game called Guitar Freaks. See, we didn't originate Guitar Hero. Guitar Hero came about because there was Guitar Freaks from Konami, and Konami's rhythm game, Guitar Freaks, was J-pop, which is not intelligible to an American ear. So they said they rewrote the game and they used rock stars, and they were going to use master tracks from all the popular rock and roll recordings, guitar music, right? Like metal and stuff. Yeah. So to make a long story short, they had it running on a demo console, and I looked at that and I just thought to myself, it's not going anywhere. That's what I thought. I was wrong several times. I thought that it wasn't what I like to do. I like cockpit games, like driving games, things like that. It's my area. Gran Turismo, for instance, is a really good game, PlayStation 2 game. So anyways, to make a long story short, they hired me to build their plastic guitars for them. So how that panned out was Guitar Hero 1 guitars were already in the process of being developed by a company called Honeybee, which is in China. They used a PlayStation game chip in them. It's just a PlayStation game chip. That was what was running. In that market, if you want a PlayStation controller, let's say a third-party controller, some Chinese controller, right, running on a PlayStation, you can buy the chipset for it. And the chipset is, 10 cents or 20 cents, and it's just available pretty everywhere in China. you put the chip on a board and you hook the wires up to it and you're done. And so that's essentially what they did with Guitar Hero 1. So I began working there on the next iterations of guitars, a wireless Xbox 360 guitar, which I knew the protocol for Xbox 360. I knew all the protocols, actually, the spy port Nintendo's and so forth. Anyways, I know all that stuff. So I already had all those parts in place and they brought me on board. So it was kind of easy in a way for me to do it. Now, the drum set is also my my engineering on that. So they had a Guitar Hero World Tour, had a drum set that came with it. So you could play the drums in a band. Like there's two people on plastic guitars, one guy on the drum, but you could do that. Interestingly enough, Charles and Kai Hong, their Red Octane was a video game rental business. And these guys already had experience with rhythm games because they had built a dance mat. So we had the engine that could run a rhythm game finished. The engine is the core software port, not the graphics and the avatars and stuff, just the highly tuned software for it. So had that already. And so it was kind of a slam dunk. There was a company called Harmonix in Boston who wrote the game, Guitar Hero game, and also wrote their copy of Dance Dance Revolution. So to make a long story short, there were precedent work there that was done. The two Wong brothers, Kai and Charles, already owned all this stuff. So that's the origin of Guitar Hero. Now, it went colossally huge. It was $2 billion, the first video game franchise to hit that kind of numbers. It was very, very profitable. Culturally, you saw it everywhere. And it's interesting because whenever I talk to people, they don't want to talk about Oculus. They don't want to talk about VR. They want to talk about Guitar Hero. They always ask me about that. They don't even ask me about Oculus. So I'm a pretty, pretty widely known for doing the design work, mostly on the Guitar Hero game, which is the hardware design. And I already had the parts in place, the chipsets, the relationship with Microsoft, third party. I was developing the USB-based Xbox One controller, the very initial first Xbox, developing the chipset for that. I already had that in place with Microsoft. I own the intellectual property. So pretty much it was a really good fit for everybody there. And they're a local company, literally from where I am now, which is I just moved here to a different place. But Red Octane is about 20 minutes from here, 25 minutes a car, you know, driving over there. So very small, easy to get to. So that's essentially the Guitar Hero story. I came in there. I'm sort of the person who's sort of a naysayer on stuff when I see stuff like that. That's not going to work. That's not going to sell. So often I'm right, but often I'm not. I was wrong on that one.
So let's look at that sort of element of naysaying. When the idea of the Oculus was presented to you, was there that inner skeptic immediately going, there's no market for this. This is interesting, but you know.
Well, background story. I used to work for Global VR. I did the intellectual property for them, which is inventing and so forth. Global VR was a company that had a headset on an arcade cabinet, and you stood in it and you wore it. Right? I was a tech guy there, so I already had experience with that. Global VR went out of business, so there's a huge body count in virtual reality. In history, the very large number of corpses. So I had this background already, and I kind of had a vibe about it. However, I liked Brendan. I liked the boss, and that was like 90%. I would just like the guy. You know, I got along with him really well, mostly. You know, they don't call it friendsness, right? They're not really your friends, but I was pretty friendly with him. He came and introduced himself. I didn't know him. And interestingly enough, it was because of Guitar Hero that I got the gig at Oculus. Guitar Hero, Activision rather, is published the game. It's Red Octane game, but the publisher was Activision. So a guy named Greg Deutsch worked at Activision, which Activision is Guitar Hero also, right? So the guy, Greg Deutsch, worked, he's the intellectual property guy and also the legal counsel, chief legal officer. Knows me, and so Brendan, the boss of Oculus, when they were forming the company, says, "Hey, Greg Deutsch, do you know anybody that can can build hardware. And he goes, oh yeah, talk to Jack. So that's how, as in earlier in my explanation of this thing, that's how it worked. Getting referrals and getting introduced to people. I go to a lot of trade shows and stuff like that. I circulate my stuff around. I talk to people, take them out to lunch and all that stuff. So that's how that went down. Honestly, I thought it was a dud. I still kind of in that camp. It hasn't gone global. The Vibe has, and the PR and the spin, but the actual physical hardware has not sold like a PlayStation, right? It hasn't. I think the figures I heard were 20 million units of the Quest, pretty good, but it's not PlayStation figures, 150 million, you know, 200 million figure. That's where you want to be. And it just hasn't sold. The primary problem with that, and I'll just get into that is a physiological problem. It makes people feel sick. That's the bottom line. And we never fixed that. We tried to fix it by eliminating some of the vestibular issues, the inner ear issues, but it just never really worked. 10% of the people who try on VR makes them feel sick. That's a non-starter right there. Because what happens is people say, that thing made me sick. And he goes, oh, then I'm not going to buy one. Maybe make me sick. I buy it. I spend all the money. It makes me sick. So that's kind of the issue with it. And I knew this from other Global VR and other things I'd worked on. Room Experience VR system was Global VR was like that. Had head tracking, mechanical head tracking. So I already had some experience with that. So the bottom line is, you asked me what I think, and I think the product itself is got a interesting thing. It's got a great market for certain things like architecture and science. That's where the utility is. So to make a long story short, back to my Oculus stuff, I like the guy, Brendan, and I thought the company would do okay if it were sold. The gift from Brendan was the ability for him to package and sell a company, which he had a lot of experience doing. It was a sales job on his part that made it successful to a large degree. It was due to him and a couple other people there, but my job was not that. And, you know, my job was to produce the hardware, which is what I did for them. I produced two developer kits and part of the consumer CV1, the consumer version. But by that time, we had already been acquired by Facebook, and I was on my way out of there. So at that point, the hard part of my job was actually dealing with the factory in China and then trying to keep everyone happy back home at Oculus, rather, you know, like the office. They see something wrong, a small problem, they're not familiar with the process, and they panic, and it just goes away, just like poof. Not even an issue. That's kind of like I got tired of dealing with that stuff. So, but to summarize it, I would say that I enjoyed working with most of the people there. The company, I was mostly in China because we had 90 days to get the first developer kit from the time we whiteboarded it to the time it shipped. 3 months is very short. And we sold roughly 70,000 or something of those. We originally only sold 10,000 on Kickstarter. That's the other thing is I didn't realize all of the PR and the vibe that came off of that was purposeful. We targeted things. We were on television on Jimmy Kimmel, which is an American TV show, right? That's a late night show. I started seeing it in pop culture. So, and that was... not because of me, but because of my boss's ability to get it in front of the right people. And we targeted a person who's a VC, who's a hardcore gamer. Those guys did. They targeted him so they could do an intro to Mark Zuckerberg, who fell in love with the thing. So that's kind of how it went down. The challenge that I had was the hardware portion of it. Was not particularly challenging. We bought an off-the-shelf LCD display. It was for a tablet for developer kit one. It's a tablet LCD display that's in there. On the developer kit two, we had an OLED display, so slightly different, but still it's a tablet display inside of it. The lenses and so forth, interesting. Palmer Luckey got the lens design off eBay. Palmer Luckey cut. Yeah, he did. I said, it's what he told me. He found those on eBay. They were a magnifying glass with a light in it. He said, oh, that's perfect. Little plano convex lens. And so that's where he got him. We copied that. He said, let's just copy what he's done because it's kind of working right now. And that's essentially what we did, is copy an initial prototype that he did, put it in the plastic. That's how I got it done in 90 days. The second developer kit was a more involved 6 months of work to get it from whiteboarding into production, mass produced. That was my job at Oculus, is running the engineering and production stuff. That's what I did for him.
Just one last question as we're running out of time here, unfortunately. Just to return to virtual and augmented reality, of course, in the last few weeks, we've seen Apple's Vision Pro hit the shelves. It seems to solve a couple of problems, particularly in terms of, mimicking eye contact, that sort of thing. If you were to go back and have a look at what you're working on with Oculus, do you see this kind of application as being sort of something that could eventually help put the device over if it adds a little bit more of a human touch to it? Or do you think this is, more gimmickry, more, innovation for innovation's sake, if it even is innovative? Because I think we've all tried a similar solution at home with multiple TVs instead of knocking through a wall.
Yeah. So in regards to the Vision Pro, Apple, success or not, Apple has got the GDP, has the, its value of the company is greater than the GDP of Mexico. That's how rich the company is. And I think, and Microsoft and Apple are head and neck and neck right now, at Microsoft with their AI stuff, NVIDIA also. So, if this doesn't work out, it's no big deal to Apple because they already have enough revenue. A company that's much smaller, that this is their chief product, is much higher risk for them. So I know those guys. I know the people who developed that really well, I think. And I've been over on campus there at Apple talking to those guys. But definitely competent engineers. Apple's got great engineers. Here's how you can tell if a company's a good company to work for, right? Just in short. If you look at someone and you're talking to them, you go, how long have you worked here? And he goes, 25 years. You know it's a good company to work for because he's put up with that for 25 years. It must be have something good about it. I mean, the stock options certainly are good, right? If you were there 25 years ago and you got options, RSUs or something like that, restricted units, then you're pretty well off. You're doing really well. It's not just that, though. It's the vibe and stuff and comfortable working there. And if you go to a company and people are there like 6 months, 8 months, like maybe you shouldn't work there. At Apple, that is the case. People are there. The gray hair people, I was the only gray hair at Oculus. I was the oldest guy at Facebook. Also, long stretch. When I went there, I looked around at people and going, there are no older people here. How come? Well, this is a new company, right? So, but anyhow, if the vibe you're getting is not good, then you should look somewhere else. And I always used that metric when I was interviewing or talking to people. Like, if I want to go there, I want to find out how long people have been there, because that's an indication that's a good place to work. So, incidentally, all the people that I, Oculus people that I went to work, the principal people, the co-founders, all have either been fired or laid off from Facebook or quit. Let me tell you something. To answer your question in regards to the market, I think there's a market for VR, and I'm not sure it's video games. I would want, and this is, not my idea, but I would want to go to a sporting event and sit in a really prime seat and watch the entire game with the audience next to me, right? That would be intriguing. That seems like a good app for it. I would like to, just a background, sir. I went to Fisker Automotive. Now, Henrik Fisker has got the Ocean. It's an EV, right? I'm an EV guy. So I meet Henrik and his beautiful wife, and we're sitting down and talking. And he goes, I have a Toyota took a Lexus LC500 and made it a video game asset by rendering, by taking the original design files for it. excuse me. And making a model that you can walk around and look at. And I go, wow, that's a really great idea. It'd be cool if you wanted to see a car, like shop for a car, put the Quest on or Vision Pro and stand up and walk around it. And because as it's pointed out to me, you know, so I kind of know this, people buy a vehicle, a lot of it's based on the way it looks, if it's attractive to you. They're, you know, in most cases, people have to have a emotional attachment or attraction to it. It'd be nice to be able to have that experience in your living room or someplace like that, if you walk around and look at the vehicle. I think that would be a great application for VR. As I said earlier, people play video games on 2D screen, and that's just the way it is. And it's not a visual thing either. It's a social thing. And people have... the proverbial 400-pound guy in his mom's basement, right? He doesn't really exist. It's guys not quite my age, but between the ages of 19 and 35. That's your market there, you know, those guys playing the games. And so those guys play it on that 2D screen, you know, probably at work, you know, when they're kind of like they're doing their jobs. You know, they play it at home. That's the way it is. It's not a... And to put a pair of VR goggles on and play a video game in it is just not intriguing. I'll be honest with you. I thought the games that came with the Quest sucked. I didn't think they're entertaining at all. I mean, they're intriguing. You know, it's visually. I shouldn't think they're fun. And the game, the metaverse that their Horizon Worlds that they're working on, they had a disco and some other stuff. I walked around and it was like, it's not for me. Yeah, you can go to a real disco, right? Why not just go to a real disco? Why do you need to? So people are dancing and stuff, and it's just strange. And the problem, I said this publicly, I'm going to get myself in trouble. The problem with Facebook is that it was dictated to the creative people what to produce. Not asking them what to produce, but dictating from the top down. It will do this. You will do that. It doesn't work that way in video games. You got to get out of the way. I think the key is, especially your management, is like, keep your mouth shut and just let them do it. Get out of the way. Let the young guys do this stuff, young people, and that's what they're good at. And so this is what they didn't happen at Facebook. And there was a vision by somebody, I won't mention who it is, of what it's going to be. And that was the problem. And then you saw the videos, like people didn't have legs. They were like an egg-shaped thing. It was very strange. Like, you don't put that out in public. You don't show them anything. You intrigue them with what it could be. Don't show anything like that. It's just the reverse of what the launch on a video game. You don't do that. So it's just a kind of a big screw up in that part. I'm glad they bought the business, though. You know, I'm happy for the people that worked at Oculus, who worked hard there and got the rewards of hard work and so forth. I just don't see where Facebook goes with this point.
That was Jack McCauley, co-founder of Oculus, chatting with Niall Kitson.
This is Tech Radio with Dusty Rhodes and Niall Kitson.
That's it for our show this week. Do check out some of the other stories online. What have we got there, Niall?
Yeah, we've got the role of AI in the climate crisis, for good or ill. NVIDIA shows off Blackwell, which it promises is the world's most powerful computer chip. And the Digital Hub goes searching for its first designer in residence.
You'll find all of those stories and more online at techessential.ie. We're back again next Friday with a brand new show online and, of course, with RTE Radio 1 Extra. Do remember to share our podcast with a friend. Just tell them to look up Tech Radio Ireland on Apple, Spotify, or now on YouTube as well. Until next time, from myself, Dusty Rhodes, and from Niall Kitson, thanks for listening. Take care.
Remember, you can get the latest Irish tech news with hourly updates, daily newsletters, and more at our website, techcentral.ie. Share the knowledge and invite a friend to listen. Search Apple, Spotify, or YouTube for Tech Radio Ireland, or listen with RTE Radio 1 Extra. Tech Radio is produced by dustpod.io for techcentral.ie. From me, Artemis, live long and prosper.